You know, it's a machlekes lahalacha if the avelus of the 3 weeks begins tonight or tomorrow morning, because the tainus, as we know, doesn't begin till the morning. So it's a big nafkamina. Are you allowed to make a chasna tonight? There are tshuvas that matter it. You know, so it's a big machlekes. But be it as it may, if this is not the zman of avelus yet, it's the veses hasamuch to the zman of avelus. So certainly. You should be mispainein into the korban. You know, in Siman Aleph of the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber brings that a person that's Yarei Shemayim should get up at Chatzais to be misabel over the korban Beis Hamikdash. This is the inyan of what's called Tikkun Chatzais, which most of us are not noyig in particular. So Rav Eliel Lapyan, huh? Well, okay. yeah. But Rav Eliel Lapyan, who was already a Zaken, one of the old great Bali Musar, began to do Tikkun Chatzais in his 80s. So someone asked him, like, why is the Mashgiach doing it now? So he says he feels he was B'Saif Yamav, and after Me'a V'Yesrim Shana, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a Bechina. They go through the Shulchan Aruch, and they say, did you keep this halacha? Keep it? So he says, B'Me'la, the stuff that's in Tough Reish, you know, Ayin Gemel, by the time they get to that, maybe they're not going to push too hard because they've already gone through a whole bunch of stuff. But if I fail something in Sif Out and Siman Aleph, he says they're going to be very strict on me. So he felt that certainly in Yonim and Siman Aleph, Hibadafka has to be Mekayim. We began talking about Torah Derech Eretz. I do want to correct one thing. I did make a mistake, and you guys pointed it out correctly. So, and I was thinking of something else. I had mentioned that Rav Hirsch's first sefer, that guy was very, very famous, which he wrote it anonymously, but the sefer was very famous, is called the 19 Letters, or whatever the German translation of the 19 Letters is. And I had indicated that it was an alternating dialogue between the attacker and Rav Hirsch. But no. The only letter that attacks Yiddishkeit is the first letter. So Rav Hirsch wrote 18, well, he wrote all of them, but 18 of the letters are in defense of Torah, and only the very first letter is a very, actually surprisingly, it's amazing that Rav Hirsch wrote it, it's a surprisingly strong attack on Yiddishkeit, on Torah, on mitzvahs. It's old-fashioned, it holds you back, you can't enjoy life, etc. Like, all of the tainus were put into the letter, and then the 18 letters, Masber. It's called, the name that he gave to it is either Igeres Safun, which means the anonymous letters, the hidden letters, or some call it Igeres Naphtali, the letters of Naphtali. Now, where do you get Naphtali? So this is kind of a little bit of a double pun. Rav Hirsch's last name was, of course, Rav Hirsch. In Yiddish and in German, Hirsch means a deer. In Moshe Rabbeinu's bracha for Naphtali, it's Naphtali Ayala, I'm sorry, Yaakov Avinu's bracha for Naphtali, Naphtali Ayala Shalucha. Naphtali is like a sent deer, a deer that goes forward. So Mimela Hirsch turns into Naphtali. Now, the 19 letters was a phenomenal success, mainly among non-religious Jews. In other words, Jews were being assimilated, as I mentioned. In Germany, the issue was not only Haskalah, the issue was conversion to Christianity. It was even worse than the Haskalah. People were simply becoming Goyim Gemurim, not because they believed in Yashka, but since Yiddishkeit meant nothing to them, and you needed to be a member of the Lutheran Church to get a job in a profession, so hundreds and hundreds of Jews were simply becoming Christians. Mabakach. Mendelssohn, who was actually the founder of the Haskalah, all of his children became Goyim, grandchildren became Goyim, there was Mamish. I believe there is no Jewish descendants alive of Mendelssohn today. But the 19 letters, for the first time, gave German youth, college students, whatever it was, a sense that you could be Jewish, you could even be frum, and you can be modern, etc. And it was a very, very big bestseller, surprisingly, for Svarim. It was written anonymously, but eventually the identity of the Mechaber became known. Now, Rav Yisrael Salanter was living in Germany at the time, and he very much wanted this to be translated into Yiddish and even Hebrew, because he felt it could help Kirov in Lithuania and in Russia as well. Yeah.
I'm just curious, did he make money off?
I don't think he made any money. This was not, I mean, even today, Sfarim are not profitable. Even a bestseller of Sfarim is nothing compared with a secular novelist. You know, secular novelists can sell 5 million books. A best-selling sefer, like a Minchas Chinuch, right? One, I believe that the Mechon Yushalayim Minchas Chinuch is considered to be the bestseller of Sfarim. So that sells something like 15,000 a year. So that's how it's the bestseller. So you can't get rich by selling Sfarim. So I really don't know what Rav Hirsch made. But I'll tell you a very fascinating mitzvah about Rav Hirsch and money. It's a very interesting thing. Rav Hirsch was an extremely, as every gadol would be, extremely honest about money. He did not want to take any mammon that he hadn't earned. So as he got sick towards the end of his life, I'm getting ahead of myself, he got paid every 6 months. In other words, he would get paid for a half year ahead of time. And it was the secular year. So he got paid, let's say, January 1st, which covered through June 30th. And then he got paid July 1st to cover December 1st. So throughout the summer, the last summer of his life, he had a tremendous pachad that he would die before he earned all of the salary for his last half year. So he was always telling his family, leaving him a mitzvah, that if I die in November or October, whatever it is, be sure that you give back that chelik of the money. So Rav Hirsch was nifter 12 midnight, December 31st. So it's Ritzayin Yirei of Yaseh that the pshat is he had earned his entire salary. So that's the mitzvah they say. It's mesmamish recorded that way. But okay. In any event, Torah im Derech Eretz. There's a fascinating letter from the Michtav Me'Eliyahu. Torah im Derech Eretz was Rav Hirsch's sheet. Again, remember the basic history. Rav Hirsch was a Talmud of the Binyan Siyan. It was really one of the last Ga'anim, traditional Ga'anim in Germany. Germany was Mamish and Nira Nidachas. Frankfurt, which was the city of the Pnei Yoshua and the Chassam Sefer 100 years before. There was Mamish, barely a minion of from Jews. The Reform movement had taken over the city. And remember that because of the German laws in effect, the Jewish community, however that was defined, had total legal control over taxes on the Jewish population, over shuls, over schools, over mikvahs, over kashrus. And you could not secede from that community unless you converted to Christianity. So you're a frum guy in this sea of Reform. You were a member of that community unless you want to become Christian, which is, that's no improvement, right? Well, some might say it's better to be a goy than a Reform. Okay, whatever. So basically, it was a stranglehold. You weren't allowed to open a shul. You weren't allowed to have a minyan. You weren't allowed to have a yeshiva. There was mamish nothing you can do. The Reform movement, they were not just like American Reform. You had Mamela, Americans are tolerant. So even American Reform, right, they'll tolerate from people. But that was much more hardball. That Reform, mamish, took away the rights of religious Jews to have schools. You wanted to teach your kid Torah, you did it privately. Now, they didn't arrest you if you did it privately. It wasn't like the Yevonim, so to speak. But you could not have an official yeshiva in cities like Frankfurt. So Rav Hirsch, in the meantime, as a young man, after he did the 19 letters, because he'd done this in his 20s, was already rising in the rabbinic ranks. He was chief rabbi of Moravia, some provinces in Germany, and he had a lot of influence, and there was not as assimilated as Frankfurt. But he gets a letter one day, and I said 10 Jews, it was actually 11 Jews. Frankfurt had 11 frum Jews. From 11 frum Jews in Frankfurt, who were trying to get the government to legally recognize them as a separate community, which would give them the ability to have a school and a shul. And in a case of great chutzpah, amazing chutzpah, they asked the chief rabbi of Moravia if he would kind of become their rav. Pretty crazy. Here you have like a rav of a whole medina, and he's invited by slightly more than a minyan to become a rav. And they didn't expect Rav Hirsch to say yes. It was like sometimes you just ask for something, and for sure the answer is going to be no. But Rav Hirsch resigned his rabbanus as chief rabbi in Moravia to become the rav of 11 Jews, 11 families in Frankfurt. And he spent the last 45 years of his life as the rav of the Frankfurt Kehillah, and that became Kahal Hadas Yeshurun, that later became the Breuer's community in Washington Heights, etc. That was the surviving community after the Holocaust. And he was miyasid a kehila based on a shita that he called Torim Derech Eretz, sometimes abbreviated Tide. And that was first articulated in the 19 letters. And later it was expanded in a book that was called Chorev. Many of you may have seen Chorev. Chorev was written in German, but generally speaking, most people read it in English today. And Chorev was supposed to be part one of two books. The second book never got written. There was Chorev and there was Moriah. Chorev, which is Sinai, Chorev is Har Sinai, is really a kind of a basic explanation of the halachic system and the mitzvahs of the Torah. Divided into chapters. So it'll be divided into human relationships, bein adam lechaveiro, bein adam lemakom, compassion towards animals, you know, all sorts of different headings, in which he then goes through the basic yesodos of a mitzvah based on Torah shebichsav and Torah shebal peh. So it's a guidebook. If you were a person who didn't learn in yeshiva, you would be able to get an overview of the Torah. But the Emes says, even for people who are learned, even for B'nai Torah, Rav Hirsch offers philosophical explanations and reasons for mitzvahs. Right? So it's a sefer that many people like and many people use, even if they don't need the basic information. But it was written to be understood by people with virtually no background. Chorev. Now, the second part, which never was written, was Moriah. Remember, these are the two great mountains. Chorev is Har Sinai, and Har HaMoriah is the Har HaBayis, the Har of the Akedah, and that was to be more of the philosophy and theology of Judaism. So Chorev, the Yesod, was the Halacha, and Moriah would be more of the Hashkafa, but that was never written. But part of why it wasn't written is because I think Rav Hirsch discovered, as he was writing Chorev, that in explaining the halacha, he got into the hashkafa, so there was like less of a need. The truth of the matter is, you know, you asked me about money, there actually is a certain economic angle here, because Rav Hirsch initially, his initial plan was to write Chorev and Moriah, and he submitted it to a publisher as a prospectus. The publisher basically said, hey, this is a big book, Chorev is like 1,000 pages, he says, I'm not sure if it's going to sell, so why don't you do something smaller first, which doesn't cost so much money to produce, and then we'll see if there's a market for this type of book. So the 19 letters was actually written because the publisher told Rav Hirsch, give us a kitzer of your philosophy. We'll send it out, and if it's a bestseller, we'll cover Chorev. So it's not that Rav Hirsch made profit, but basically the 19 letters was there as a tanai in order for Chorev to be... Chorev is also a very, very popular book. And again, both the 19 letters and Chorev are read today. They're learned today. Now, I'll discuss the big machloks about what Rav Hirsch is, Shita, and the like. And of course, Rav Hirsch wrote in his tenure in Frankfurt his great commentary on the Chumash, which has suffered a lot because of German sentence structure. The problem with translating Rav Hirsch is, if you know German, I actually don't know German, but I'm aware of the sentence structure. The same issue with Freud, anyone who wrote in German. German is a very, very heavy language. The sentences are long, they're ponderous, they're wordy, they're verbose, but that's the way German is. And 19th century German, was especially flowery. Now, when you translate that in English, literally, it's very, very ponderous and repetitive. So the first translation of Rav Hirsch, which was the Judaica Press, Isaac Levy, who was a grandson of Hirsch, many people have some difficulty with it because it's just like this. Some people like it, but some people have difficulty with the style, which is really a reflection of an over-literal translation of the German. Now, they just retranslated Rav Hirsch in a more modern English language, and it's actually much more readable. So if you can, might want to check the new edition of Rav Hirsch, and perhaps it'll be more miskabel in case you had trouble with the older edition. The older edition was a function of German. But so we have the 19 letters, we have Chorev, we have the commentary on Chumash, we have the commentary on Tehillim, and after Rav Hirsch's death, they published a commentary on the Siddur, which was found in his Ksavim. And in addition, he wrote many, many essays explaining his philosophy that were published in journals, and they were assembled in like 8 volumes that are called collected writings. Right? Those are like 8 volumes of collected writings. So it's an amazing thing. We look at Rav Hirsch as a mechaber. We look at Rav Hirsch as a mechadesh. We look at Rav Hirsch as someone who wrote. And when we think of a mechaber, we sometimes think of somebody like the Vilna Gaon, who was locked up in a room. Even the Chazon Ish, of course, it's a mistake even about the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was writing all day. The truth is, the Chazon Ish himself was tremendously involved in Sorchei Tzibur. And Rav Hirsch, even more so. Rav Hirsch was an extremely busy person in building up a community, building schools, building shuls, building mikvos, creating kashrus institutions. And although his home base was Frankfurt, from Frankfurt the shita was nispashet throughout Germany. He was also involved in many legal fights, because remember, the whole purpose of why he was invited was not simply to be a rev of 11 people, but to create a legal condition where they had the right to form a separate kehila. And that involved lobbying, that involved political negotiation, that involved many fights, that involved government involvement. And he was involved. He was quite a tough fighter. He was constantly negotiating with government officials for legal recognition and the like. So it's amazing that Rav Hirsch was able to accomplish what he accomplished, both, you know, because normally you're doing one or the other, right? There are people that are Isaac B'tzorchei Tzibur, and then there are people who are Isaac in Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, and yet he was Isaac in both Shtachim simultaneously. In the Perush on Chumash in particular, there are many Chidushim in Halacha. If you look, for example, in Parshas Mishpatim, in Rav Hirsch's Pshatim, there are like Chidushim. He'll say, according to, usually that's only in Hebrew. The translators don't always translate it. In other words, they translate it, but sometimes Rav Hirsch has a Chiddush. He'll say, Lefi zeh yisyashev kushas hamishnah lemelech in Hilchas Niskei Mamon. Now, the translator didn't bother to translate it because, you know, if you're not holding and learning, you won't understand it. But look again at Rav Hirsch's Perush. You will see that with some frequency, he'll be meramez to a taitzvis, a ramban, a lechem mishnah, a mishnah lemelech, a ktsais, a nesivis. And svarim later, they actually were malaki from his perish on chumish, chidushim al hashas. They made a sefer of chidushim al hashas taken from his perish on the chumish. So it is a very, very good perish. It suffered a lot from the translation of the German structure. By the way, Sara Schnerer, who in Poland founded the Beis Yaakov movement to give girls schooling. This was in Poland. Her primary influence, because remember, I mean, girls in Poland before Beis Yaakov were not learning Svarim at all, but her primary influence was learning Rav Hirsch's commentary in German. And that was a big, big hush. I'm sorry, someone that... Yeah, yes?
You say that the Hirsch was first in German, then in Hebrew.
Yes, he wrote everything in German, yeah.
So the translation
in other words, how did he write? So I think he did it this way as well. What happened was, the commentary was in German, but when he had a ha'ara that would be appreciated by a Talmud Chacham, he wrote it in Hebrew. So when the translator translated, the German was translated into English, but the Hebrew was left as Hebrew. Now, I'm not sure what they did in the newer ones. I didn't check that yet. Maybe the newer one tries to even translate that. But again, I mean, it wouldn't make sense in translations. Just as, you know, Lefize, Yisyashiv, Kushas HaKatzayis, Besimin, Reish Beis Ayin, Ayin Shem. I mean, that's what the note will say, and, you know, it wouldn't be intelligible necessarily. Yeah.
The Chumash is also his Chumash German.
Yeah, in fact, one thing that's interesting, people don't pay attention to, Rav Hirsch not only wrote a perush on Chumash and Tehillim, but he also made a translation. And in Tehillim especially, if you ever look at a Hirsch Tehillim, look at the translation. The translation, and there was a very good translator on Tehillim, who was an expert in German and Hebrew. So she translated the German. She didn't translate from the Hebrew of Tehillim. She translated Rav Hirsch's translation. Rav Hirsch's translation is very mechudish. One shouldn't just read the Perush. One should bedavka look at the translation. In the Torah too, he is sometimes mechadish, although it's less, you know, in the translation of the Torah, there's less of chidushim. Yeah.
The new translation, like the line of the, it's not
they published the Hebrew copy of the translation of his period.
Oh, why? Because the translator didn't know German? Why would you translate?
The German was too inaccessible, and that was okay. The problem. So the
German style is a big problem. Again, I mean, Lahavdil Mea Havdalis, this is the same problem that many Americans have reading Freud, besides the Teichen of Freud, which is obviously a big problem. German sentences just go on and on and on. There are never any periods in German sentences, and Rav Hirsch was a victim of that as well. Now, let me just mention one. Okay, what is the hashkafa of Torah Derech Eretz? It's actually very, very tricky. Some say Torah Derech Eretz is the same thing as we call modern Orthodox today, or centrist Orthodox. They have machlekes, what their title is, modern Orthodox, centrist Orthodox, contemporary Orthodox, neo-Orthodox. So Torah Derech Eretz just kind of means modern. You know, go to the movies, mixed swimming, mixed dancing, you know, all of that. You know, anything goes, as long as you, you know, keep Shabbos and some level of kashrus. But that's not it at all. I mean, Rav Hirsch was, what am I going to say? I mean, he was obviously an extremely medayik in halacha. All of the gedolim of Eastern Europe, of Poland and Russia, considered him a gadol b'Torah. They considered him to be Mechaye Mesim. That was the term that was commonly used. He mamish brought back German Judaism, which was mamish dead, almost dead, and he brought it back into a very vibrant derech. But Rav Hirsch's shita of Torah Derech Eretz basically is that Derech Eretz refers to all aspects of life, business, culture, even secular wisdom. And Rav Hirsch felt that a person, rather than separate from all of those endeavors, a person can take Torah and involve himself in this. Now, because of this, in Rav Hirsch's kehila, people did go to university. They went to college. There was, at least at the time, now we'll discuss what's the pshat in this, big machlokas. There was, in the time, no concept of a kaila. In fact, even the initial concept of a yeshiva after high school was originally bedeichik. It was started by his son-in-law, who came from Hungary, Rav Shlomo Breuer. But in Rav Hirsch's own lifetime, there was not necessarily a higher yeshiva, etc. They tell me, although I don't know if this is 100% true, they tell me that in Rav Hirsch's school, for limudei chol in the afternoon, the students did not even wear yarmulkes. That he felt you wear yarmulkes for limudei kodesh, and you didn't. I'm not sure if that's true, but this is what is reported in some ways. Now, there were many, many interesting people who came out of the Torah Derech Eretz Chinuch. I'll mention two of them that lived into modern times. They were not talmidim of Rav Hirsch, because Rav Hirsch was nifter in 1880, but they were talmidim of talmidim. They were talmidim of the system. One was Rav Shlomo Volba. But what's interesting, Rav Volba himself, bit of a machlekes, so some things are still a little mysterious, was Rav Volba Baal Tshuva? Not entirely clear. Some say Rav Volba's parents were not even Orthodox, but it seems to be that Rav Volba simply grew up in a Torah Derech Eretz Hashkafa. But later, he was one of the few who gravitated to Mir, and he became a Talmud of Rav Yeruchim Lubavitz. Nevertheless, because of his connection to Torah Derech Eretz, all of his life, he felt that even secular psychology had some yesodos that he was able to draw upon in devising the way that you could reach a bocher in Derech HaMusar. In fact, for a time, Rav Volba, who became really the greatest, kind of the greatest mashgiach of our door, went to Switzerland. He was in Switzerland during the war. He escaped Germany and went to Switzerland. But he actually was a disciple of Jean Piaget. I'm not sure how many of you heard of Piaget, but P-I-A-G-E-T. He's a goy. But he was considered to be one of the greatest child psychologists of the 20th century, and Piaget did very pioneering work in how children think and how their personalities get developed. And Rav Volba was mishamish Piaget for around 6 months to try to learn the technique and learn some of the ideas, which Rav Volba then incorporated in many of his shitas of Musar. This is kind of the outgrowth of Torah im Derech Eretz, that Hagam, that he was a Talmud of Rav Yeruchim, but he saw a certain value in incorporating those chachmas. The truth is, even Rav Yisrael Salanter, who admired Rav Hirsch, also believed this is nichlal in chachma bagoyim. By Goyim Tam. Of course, you have to be very careful. It's like Rabbi Meir learning from Elisha ben Avuya, right? He became an apikoris. So they asked Rabbi Meir, how could you learn from an apikoris? And what's Rabbi Meir's answer? I found a remine, I found a pomegranate, I eat the fruit, and I throw away the klipa. So you have to be a chacham, right? Most of us might eat the wrong thing, right? You might eat the klipa and throw away the fruit. In fact, one Rosh Hashiva once said this. One Rosh Hashiva, who unfortunately was also involved in a lot of political machlokas, because whatever, he had to, because he was defending various issues. He once says that he sometimes feels that he has Talmidim who are much more interested in the politics than in the learning. So he says, it's mamash fakert. The politics is my klipa, and my Torah is my fruit. But here I have Talmidim who want to eat the klipa. They throw away the fruit. Like the opposite. So sometimes that can happen, certainly this way as well. Another person who was a very, very interesting Talmud of this Torah Derech Eretz, but he also wound up in the yeshivas in Europe, was Rav Shimon Schwab. Now I want to mention Rav Schwab in particular because some of you may have known him or at least heard of him. And I also want to mark on a fascinating machlokas between Rav Schwab and Rav Dessler regarding the validity of Torah Derech Eretz. Rav Schwab was very interesting because Rav Schwab really lived in both worlds. Rav Schwab was born in Germany. He was born to a very religious house. His father and his mother were chashuvim. They were pillars in Hamburg. Very, very firm. Rav Schwab had four brothers, so there were five boys altogether. Three of them became very, very well known in the world of Torah. Rav Shimon Schwab became the Rav of Washington Heights, the Breuer community, which was Rav Hirsch's community in America. Rav Moshe Schwab became a Mashgiach, the Mashgiach of Gateshead, great Gadol in Musar. And Rav Mordechai Schwab also became a Rosh Hashiva in America. So three of them were very chashuv. And Rav Schwab mentioned that although his father was not a big Talmud Chacham, but his father was such a Yorei Shemayim and such a Balmidos that if there was any deviation from Emes, he remembered one time that his mother gave him some money to go to the store, and he used some of the change to buy some chocolate. So he came back, and his mother asked him, where's the change? So he said, I must have lost it. But she then notices the wrapper sticking out of his pocket. So she wasn't angry at him that he used the change. He just said, you said a sheker. You didn't say emes. And he says he never forgot the look on her face. And then when the father came home, the father said, you didn't say emes today. He says, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And he decided, you're not going to get a bracha Friday night. Friday night I'm not going to give you a bracha. And he says that was like the biggest pain. He says he could never say a sheker after that again. Or he recounts a seder with his father. This is pretty tough love. I don't think I would say it. He says to his sons, after they do the Arba Bunim, he says to his sons, what son do you want to be when you grow up? So four out of the five brothers said, I want to be the Chacham. Rav Moshe Schwab, who became the Baal Musar, said, I want to be the Tam. That's interesting in itself. They're already children. And then he said, Baruch Hashem, the Chacham, the Tam, all of that is good. Yaakov Ish Tam. But he says, I want you to know, if any of you ever become Rishayim, He says, I love you all, but I love Hashem more. He says, I'll have nothing to do with you. He says, nothing to do with you. He says, so just know, as much as I love you, this is it. So the kids were like so shaking. We can't be a Russia, can't. Or he said, fine, one other thing he said. And this is a beautiful, this is mommy, something I think you should take halacha l'maisa. He says that sometimes if the kids misbehaved or they didn't have proper midos, the parents would punish. And one of the punishments was that when they ate bread in the morning, they wouldn't have jam. Normally they had bread and jam. You wouldn't have jam. But listen to this. This is mamish. This is gevaldik chinuch. So if a child was punished because he didn't have jam, the parents wouldn't have jam that morning either. As if to say, we're suffering with you. And the emes is, the incentive for them to behave was more that their parents shouldn't suffer than them, right? The old slime that hurts me more than it hurts you, right? Yeah, things like that. So Rav Schwab was mamish miyusid in this yisayit of Torim Derech Eretz. Now again, Torim Derech Eretz was designed to primarily produce what we would call an Erlecha Balabas. A Balabas who was Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Kashrus, who was honest in business, who learned every day, but not the whole day. We call it an Erlecha Balabas. And Rav Schwab grew up in that environment. But at some point, a little mysterious, wow, he went off to Mir to learn. Mir seems to be the place of all the yeshivas. Mir, for some reason, attracted. Well, what happens is it's a ripple effect. Once one German boy goes, other German boys go. But there weren't that many. But it says that the great kayach that was mashpia on both Rav Schwab and on Rav Volbe was Rav Yeruchim Levavitz. And Rav Yeruchim Levavitz, who was the great mashgiach of Mir, he was a Talmud of the Alter of Slobodka. He used to give special chaburis for Americans and Germans. Because Americans and Germans, they both came from a different type of seviva. The Polish, Litvisha boy came from poverty. He came from a world where really there were no alternatives to Torah, even in Gashmias. You know, you couldn't go to law school, you couldn't go to med school, you couldn't go to college. Nobody had any money. There was nothing in Eilam Hazad that was Meishach you. What did you look around? Illiterate peasants? You know, who were the Polish, you know, there were nothing that you wanted to imitate. So Memela, they gravitated to Torah. But Germany, people came from culture. They even came from a Hashkafa that said you don't have to learn all day. It's not that important. At least there was a feeling. Americans came, of course, from Ravchus, material prosperity. So many of them had difficulty adjusting to yeshiva life because they came from a whole different type of Hashkafa. And Rav Yeruchim was metapel with them, especially. And Rav Yeruchim used to tell them that you're going to get more schar than all of the Litvisha and Polisha Bachrim, because you've given up so much to learn Torah. Right? A Litvisher, Polisher person, in a sense, didn't give anything up because there was nothing out there. There was no alternative there. But the German, American... Now, Rav Volbe tells the story. I'm going back and forth with Rav Schwab and Rav Volbe, but I'll go back to Rav Schwab. I just want to mention, Rav Volbe tells the story that when he came to Mir, you know, he was a Torah and Derech Eretz person. He was a person who was an Erlich, Shomer Mitzvahs. But this concept of learning all day was not something that was in his hashkafa. It just wasn't something that was a big thing in Germany. So he comes and he meets an Alter Bacher in Mir. You know, in Mir they used to get married later. And the Alter Bacher says, "How old do you think I am?" And so Rav Volpe said, "Yeah, you look like you're 28. He says, No, I'm only 3 years old. Says, "How you talk? What do you mean you're 3 years old?" He says, "I came to Mir 3 years ago and I met Rav Yeruchim. And that's when I was born." And Rav Volbe writes in the Alei Shur that he would be mayed on himself, the same thing. That he counts his birth from Rav Yeruchim. But being as it may, as I say, Rav Volbe still took from the Torim Derech Eretz, the idea of Chachma Bagoyim Tamin especially. But Rav Schwab became a Rav in Germany, and then he became a Rav in Baltimore, and then he became a Rav in Washington Heights, first as the assistant of Rav Breuer, who was a grandson of Rav Hirsch, and then he became the Rav when Rav Breuer was Nifter. And when Rav Schwab was in Mir, and this is what I want to talk about, Rav Schwab was very confused initially, because he had the sheet of Torim Derech Eretz, and the Gedolim were mayed that Rav Hirsch was a Gadol. But then he goes to Mir, where they're mavakal these inyanim of Derech Eretz, and they say, the Chachmas of Goyim is worthless. So Rav Schwab actually sent a she'ela to many gedolim in Europe. He wanted to hear their chavas das. Is it mutter to go to college and learn secular studies? Tell me halacha l'maisa. Is it mutter? Now he sent it to many, many different gedolim, but he only got back 4 answers. He got back an answer from the Rosh Yeshiva of Telz, Rav Ram Yitzchak Gablach. He got back an answer from the Rugged Shaver. He got back an answer from Rav Baruch Baer, the Rosh Yeshiva of Kamenetz. And he got back an answer from Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Rashiv of Baranovich. And these answers we have, and they're printed. The basic idea, let me go from one extreme to the other extreme. Rav Baruch Ber, and this answer to Rav Schwab appears in the Birch HaShmuel in Kedushin, although Rav Schwab's name is not mentioned, basically says, getting secular education is Yehareg V'Al Yavor. It is equivalent to Avodah Zarah. A person is mechuyev to be meiser nefesh and die before you get a secular education. And he pointed out, he brought from Rav Chaim, his Rebbe, that there was some maisa about a person had a choice of going to college or going to prison or something, and he says, better to go to prison, whatever it would be. This was a Baruch Ber Shita, because he says it's Bikkul Torah. Not only is it Bikkul Torah, but it's Chilul Hashem. You're paigeya in the covet of the Torah to think that there's something in Chachma. Right, so Baruch Ber was the most kitzoni, that Rav Baruch Ber did not see any legitimacy in secular chachma. If you have to get a job, get a job. Sometimes you have to work. Rav Baruch Ber understood people work, but so become a storekeeper, become a plumber, become a, what we call a blue collar work. He says there's no real reason to be Isaac in secular education. Rav Elchanan was somewhat close to that, although not quite. The Rugged Shaver, it was not a Rosh Hashiva. The Rosh Hashiva was Ramir Simcha's co-Rav in Divinsk. And the Telzer Rosh Hashiva, although these were not college places either, they were more understanding. They said, well, if it's Kefira, if it's Sifrei Minos, if it's Apikorsis, you have to be Marchik yourself. But even then, if you need it to be able to understand and refute claims, you're allowed to. But if it's something like science or medicine or practical Chachmas, he said it would be mutter. So Rav Schwab assembled these different tshuvas. He also wrote a kuntras called Eilu V'Eilu. Eilu V'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, where, I'm not sure if it's in print. When I was in yeshiva, it was still in print. I haven't seen it recently. In which he's ma'asef different shitas of Torim Derech Eretz versus not Torim Derech Eretz. And he wants to show that these are shitas in Klal Yisrael. But let me tell you this. In the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, Rav Dester wrote a letter, which later got printed after his death in the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, where Rav Dessler strongly attacks Torim Derech Eretz, where at the same time he identifies its strengths. He says, the strength of a Torim Derech Eretz approach was there was very little defection from Yiddishkeit. People were from, they stayed from, their kids stayed from, they didn't go off the Derech. And Rav Dessler was makir that in, and of course this is an issue that we face in Eretz Yisrael today and in America, that when you create a miskeres, when you create a framework where the only goals that are considered to be legitimate goals are full-time learning, and there are kids who are not going to be able to concentrate, or they're not so intellectually smart, or they don't have the zitzfleisch, they're going to feel like failures, they're going to feel like second rate. And what happens under those circumstances is they go off the derech, sometimes they leave Shmiras Mitzvahs, in a worst case scenario. But even if they don't leave Shmiras Mitzvahs formally, but they're tzebrachan inside, they don't have Yiddishkeit Bislavas, there are korbanas. And Rav Dessler said, the maila of Torim Derech Eretz was that you didn't have those korbanas. Because a person could be whatever he wanted to be, an accountant, a lawyer, a doctor, a businessman. No guilt, right? You didn't feel bad. You were doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. You had outlets. People who had different talents were able to use them. So the maila was, you had a hemshich of dairis without losing people. In Europe, or in Poland, you were losing people. On both sides, you were losing people who weren't smart enough to learn all day. That's one type of person you lost. And then you were losing people who were so smart that they needed to look at other things. Right? The Haskalah. In other words, you were losing two types of people. But Rav Dessler said, Taira im derech eretz is not a system that will produce gedalei taira. Because gedalei taira, and he actually, he said openly, he says that Rav Hirsch's shita did not produce gedolim. If anyone became a gadol, it's because they left Rav Hirsh Shita. They wound up in Mir or whatever it is. But the Shita mitzad atzma, it produced rabbis. Rabbis who were doctors and rabbis who had PhDs and everything else. And they were probably more learned than the average rabbi in America even today, whatever it would be. But gedolei Torah, like the Chassam Sofer, the Pnei Yoshua, who had been from, Rabbi Akiva, who had been from Germany, you weren't going to have. And Rav Dessler says, Pasha, he says, gedolei Torah cannot be produced from a taruvos of Kodesh and Chol. Gedolei Torah can only be produced from people whose single-minded sheifa is to steig and learn yayman v'layla b'hasmada. For two reasons. I have two reasons. Number one, time. If you're only learning Torah a fraction of the day, for shteitzach you're not going to be a gadol. But more than that, it's not just a question of time. It's a question that when Torah gets kind of equalized with other things, the chashivas of Torah is diminished, and memela, the Torah doesn't enter into the neshama at such a deep level. So it's not just a question of time. So here is Rav Dessler's dilemma. On one hand, the emphasis on steiging has a lot of korbanos. People leave, they can't do it, they get broken. Every yeshiva has korbanos. We have korbanos in Or Sameach, but we have korbanos other places. I can't sit all day. I can't do it. I got to do other things. We can tell a person it's a yetzahara, be misgaber, but sometimes the yetzahara breaks a person. On the other hand, Rav Dessler argued, it is only the shita of the yeshivas that'll produce gedolei Torah. So what do you choose? Rav Dessler's argument, we mentioned this before, but this is where Rav Dessler said it. Rav Dessler said, to produce gedolei Torah, it is kedai to have korbanos. Better to produce a gadol, even if you lose. And now the number he uses is a tremendous. He says the statement in Chazal that 1,000 people come to learn Chumash and only one comes out to Paskin. He meant if 999 go by the wayside, it's kedai to produce a Rav Aaron, a gadol b'tayr. So Rav Dessler, it's interesting. In Rav Dessler's attack on Tide, he identifies the kayach of Tide at the same time, right? In other words, he doesn't just say it's bad. He says, the kayach of Tide, Torim Derech Eretz, is it created Hemshech. It allowed all sorts of people to be part of a Tiridika community. Balabatim, workers, they didn't feel like failures. They didn't feel like second rate. Because a person needs, right? Again, we can talk about not being a Balgaiva, but the emes is, it is human nature that in order for a person to function well in Avodas Hashem, they have to have a sense that they're a chashuv member of their kehila. Now, if you have a situation where, if you're working, you're really a gornish, but we'll tolerate you, we'll give you an aliyah and simchas Torah with the children, that doesn't build a person up. So in Rav Hirsh's kehila, you are a balabas, shomer mitzvah. You are a chashuv esteemed person. So a kid who couldn't sit all day and learn, but he had chashivas in the kehila, in the yeshiva community, that wasn't the same. So Rav Dessler was makir that Torah im derech eretz minimized the defections, but it didn't produce gedolim, and therefore he said it was puzzle, it was treif. Now granted, Rav Hirsh did it. Rav Hirsh did it because it was mamish pikuach nefesh. If Rav Hirsh wouldn't have done it then, there wouldn't have been any from Jews in Germany. It wouldn't just be korbanos. There would be nothing at all. So Rav Hirsh did what he could, but Rav Dessler says, avada is a b'dieved. Avada, it is not a desirable shita. And even if the yeshiva derech of Poland and Lita produces many korbanos, so he was makir this. He says it is a worthwhile sacrifice. And the analogy he gives is, it's a war. Kedusha is fighting against Tumah, and when you fight a war, in order to achieve victory, there are going to be casualties. And the Yidden that are Karbanas, they'll get Olam Haba for it, because they are the casualties in the Milchama to produce Kedusha. Very striking, very controversial. But this was Rev Dessler's point. Yeah.
Why don't Rabbi Dessler suggest two ways of it? People who can potential.
Yes. Yes.
Do this way.
Yeah.
And the other way
there.
Why do you dismiss?
Actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me answer your question. I will answer your question because I have to give you historical background. Why did Rev Dessler write the letter? And when you, I'll explain that, and then you'll see exactly what's going on. Yeah. Did you want to say something? Yeah.
Nowadays, with the same argument, we put forth towards going out and doing Kira versus going to become.
You know, there are people that have said that. This is pretty amazing. Rav Schiller and Rav Weinberg, did you see the little white kuntris that came out? The yeshiva put out a little kuntris. They're going to sell it tomorrow. It's Makoros on the Chiyuv of Kira V'Chaykim. So I was involved in assembling some Makoros. So Rav Schiller asked me to look up Makoros and Kira V'Chaykim. So I said, you've been doing this for 50 years. You have to find Makoros on Kira V'Chaykim? He says, yeah. He says, people in the Torah camp question why you should waste your time. With all apologies, Chas V'Shalom, why you should waste your time on people who are rachuk from Torah, when you could spend your time learning at a higher, more advanced level. And there are people who question Kirov based on that model. It's very amazing. As you see,
people who just
not gedolim, but people who are learning Talmidei Chachamim. There are Talmidei Chachamim that say Kirov is not the best use of a Ben Terrace time. Now, obviously. Well, we look at the Kuntras. There are many Makairis. The Rambam writes very beautifully that the Chiyuv of Kirov Rechaikim comes from Avas Hashem. When you, there's a mitzvah to love Hashem. It's one of the mitzvahs. When you love Hashem, you want to be Mefarsem HaKadosh Baruch Hu to as many people as possible. And therefore, there's a Kiyum of Avas Hashem in Kirov Rechaikim. There's certainly a Kiyum of Avas Yisrael. If there's a mitzvah to give somebody food, Kal v'chomer, there's a mitzvah to give somebody the ruchnius that can allow them to serve Hashem. But yes, the argument has been made, a la Rev Dessler's argument, even against Kirov. Yeah.
And it's interesting, Rev Dessler's shita, because you see that retrospectively in the Sephardic world and in the Hasidic world, it's not true. Everybody was included. The Baal Batin, there was no,
right.
There wasn't such an elitist type of like. Mm-hmm. Of Yiddishkeit, and still it produced Gedolim. In the past hundreds of years, there was never any stopgap of Gedolim in the Sephardic world.
Yeah.
So why there did it work, and in the Litvish world, it was
just a Yeah, it's an interesting point, because you're correct. In a sense, some of Torah and Derech Eretz, some, gets mirrored in Sephardic culture, and gets mirrored even in Hasidic culture. But the difference basically was that Torah and Derech Eretz wasn't simply combining work and Torah, it was combining secular culture and Torah. Hasidim obviously reject secular culture even more than the Litvisha, and Sephardim too were not involved in going to law school or medical school or graduate programs in philosophy. So the Eretz, the poison that Rev Dessler felt, was not only in the lack of time. That's one nekuda, but it was also in the kind of equalizing of the secular culture.
So in our system nowadays, let's say in the Haredi world, it's not just secular culture that's not accepted. It's also going to work with Klal.
Yes. I think the secular world
so
went beyond.
That wasn't Rav Dessler's sheet that necessarily.
Yeah, I think Rav Dessler was primarily concerned with the secular education and culture aspects of it. But Rav Dessler's point about Korbanos is a very, very stark point. And again, I don't want to say that it's muskim. I am not saying this as a halacha l'maisa at all. One has to don this very carefully. But let me give you the... Because your question, I want to answer your question. Let me give you the historical background to this. Rav Hirsch's Torah Derech Eretz movement is actually much more complicated than you would assume, because it actually existed in several varieties and flavors, some of which Rav Hirsch himself was not masking to. There is the Torah Derech Eretz of Rav Hirsch in Frankfurt. And let me just mention a few aspects of it. It was the integration of Yiddishkeit with labor and jobs and working and secular education. Right, and the model was a frum balabas, who was a shomer mitzvahs in Torah. Let me just mention a few other parts of Rav Hirsch that come along with this. Rav Hirsch was a believer in the term that he used called Ostritz. It's a German term, A-U-S-T-R-I-T-T, which means ripping away, meaning Rav Hirsch felt, and this is almost a kanoi, you'd almost think it's the opposite of Torah and Derech Eretz, he felt, under no circumstances can Shomrei Mitzvahs be part of a community which included Reform Kehillas that were not Shomrei Mitzvahs. Even on things that might be neutral, for example, you know, money for parks or gardens, whatever it is, let's have a Jewish council, let's have a council of Orthodox Reform rabbis to fight for the environment. Rav Hirsch's shita was, it was impossible, usur al pidin, to have any official hischabras with Reform Kehillos. Because by being mechaber to Reform Kehillos, you're giving them the legitimacy that they are a co-equal branch of Judaism, and the Torah cannot be makir that. This is called Ostritz. And that has precedent, that has implications in the United States. Let me give you an example. In the United States, there was, until like 5 years ago, something called the Synagogue Council of America. And the Synagogue Council of America was supposed to be an umbrella group where conservative, reform, and orthodox rabbis were members, and they wouldn't discuss any issues of machlokas, but they would have a united front on parav issues. Things that everybody could agree on, you know, civil rights, although today with gay marriage, I'm not sure they could agree even on that, but with civil rights, you know, blacks shouldn't be discriminated against, environmental protection. So the orthodox rabbis who joined, they basically said, what's wrong? I mean, I'm not endorsing anything that's against halacha. I'm just putting my name with other rabbis. But all the way back in the 1950s, there was a big psak from Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Moshe, that said it is usur for a frum person to be a member of this synagogue council, even if they don't do anything that's connected halacha. Because the very fact of being mechaber with other so-called rabbis in a single organization means you're machshiv them as rabbis, as people who have authority within the Jewish community, and that's a ziyuf ha-Torah, that's a falsification of the Torah. So that's based, the site of that was Rav Hirsch's shita of Ostritz, that you cannot connect with the Shah. Now, keep in mind that Rav Hirsch very much differentiated between the Yachid and the Tzibur, meaning to say, a Reform Jew was allowed to be a member. If you wanted to be a dues-paying member of Kahal Adas Yeshurin, you were allowed to do, although you couldn't be an officer unless you were Shomer Shabbos, but you could be a member. He was Makarev people. He was Makarev people on one-to-one. Just because somebody wasn't from doesn't mean you don't love him, doesn't mean you don't care for him. But institutionally, Rav Hirsch was a very big machmir on Ostritz, even if that meant, like was the case in Frankfurt originally, that all you have these 11 people who are not getting all the money and the resources of the larger community. Now, I want to point out that Ostritz was a bitter machloikis among great rabbanim in Germany, many of whom were chaylik on Rav Hirsch, and they felt that the old idea, you can do more if you work within the system than if you try to work outside the system. So what happened was, in the generation after Rav Hirsch, German Orthodox, within a single city, often had two different kehila structure. They had what were called Gemeinde Rabbanim, which were Orthodox Rabbanim that were part of the overall Jewish council, including religious and non-religious. And then you had Ostritz Rabbanim, who followed Rav Hirsch's Shita. So it's interesting. So the more Kanoistika Rabbanim were Rav Hirsch's, because they felt you could not be part of that. Now, let me point out, interestingly enough, this was the one instance where Rav Hirsch was actually much more machmir than Poland and Lithuania. Because in Poland and Lithuania, there was no concept of Ostritz. In a typical Jewish kehila, a lot of times non-religious people, Vilna, Rav Chaim Eicher's kehila, had a Jewish council that had taxes, and they were in charge of buildings and shuls, and many of them were not religious. And Rav Chaim Eicher participated. Ostritz was a German invention. It does not exist in Poland. Now, the truth of the matter is, in many ways, Rav Hirsch was influenced by the history, because what happened was, in Poland, the inclusion of the non-religious didn't result in that type of oppression. For example, you didn't have a non-religious council saying, you can't open up a shul. Rav Hirsch experienced firsthand that when the Orthodox were connected to the Reform were mamish strangling them. So in a sense, but be it as it may, be aware that Ostrich was a big machlekes in Germany, and there were those who had Ostrich, and there were those that were called Gemeinde Rabbanim, and sometimes the Ostrich Rabbanim and the Ostrich Kehilos, they looked at the Gemeinde Rabbanim as kalim. They didn't respect them so much, even though many of them were great Talmidei Chachamim. Now, think about all of these analogies in Eretz Yisrael. This is really the Naf community in Neturei Karta, let's say Aguda. For example, an Ostrich Hashkafa would basically say, it is forbidden to be in the Knesset. It's forbidden to be in the government. You're working with people who are not from. You're working with people who are not religious. You can't support or endorse those decisions. You got to be separate. Asur l'ischaber l'rishayim. I'm not getting into the issue of who's a Russia. That's another question. On the other hand, the other Shita and Hashkafa would say that if there's a Tayelis that we could accomplish, we work together. In many ways, in Eretz Yisrael, this turned out to be a shtickel machlekes between the Brisker Rav and the Chazayin Ish. Now, they didn't borrow it from Rav Hirsch directly, but it's the same type of machlekes. The Brisker Rav, and Briskers to this very day, have a very strong shita of not working with the government. It's kemat neturei karta, in which no money from the government, we don't want it, we're not going to get involved, because once the government gets its tentacles into things, we're kind of controlled by them, we're tuffled to them, we can't do it. Ostrit, we would call it. The Chazayin Ish, Rebel Yashiv, today, we would say, is more of a, I don't want to use the word pragmatist because I don't want to turn it into political debates, but they basically say, when there's a Tayelis, and Gedolei Torah feel there's something positive, then one is allowed to be Mishtatif. If not being Mishtatif could mean the government could do worse things, right, the Chazon Ish gave the famous mashal. The Chazon Ish gave the following mashal. And somebody asked the Chazon Ish, how can you allow people to be in the Knesset? So much of the Knesset is against Torah. You're endorsing the Knesset. You're saying it's a legitimate body. The Chazon Ish gave this mashal. If a ganef goes over to me with a gun and says, give me your money or I'll shoot, and I give him my money so he shouldn't kill me, am I legitimating the Geneva? Am I saying that this is a good thing? I'm doing it to save my life. So the Chazon Ish says, sometimes we have to be mishtatev, because otherwise we'll be destroyed. So I'm not here to be machria. These, you understand, are Devarim Ha'omdim Barumo Shalolam. But the Chazon Ish, Briskerev, Rav Hirsch, Ostrich versus Gemeinde, this is mamish, that type of controversy. Do you basically say we got to separate? Or do you say we could do more tayelas by being mechuber? I mean, let me give you an example practically. If you were an ostrich rav, then all of the general communal functions, which, and let's say a function, they make an annual banquet, would be treif, because all the frum people belong to a separate kehila, leaving the general organization only non-religious Jews. A gemeinde rav would have the following cheshbon. You know, if I include my congregations as part of the general kehila, I might have a hashpa that all events will at least have kosher food, because we're part of the kehila. See, if we're not part of the kehila, they don't owe us anything. Right? These are cheshbonos, right? Now, this is going to be an issue you're going to face, depending on what you do, but you know, if you become a rav or whatever it is, you're going to face these issues. Do you belong to a Jewish community council? The Jewish federations that have rabbis of different persuasions. Are you giving legitimacy, or is it simply something in which you feel you can do a toelis? Are you allowed, again, I'm absolutely not going to poskin for you here, but are you allowed to give a shir in a Reform synagogue? Are you giving it chashivas and legitimacy by doing so? Or fakert, are you bringing Torah to people who otherwise would not go to you because they don't want to go to an Orthodox synagogue because they think it's fanatic? These are shailas. You have to have das Torah on these. You have to be sure to have someone that you ask. But all I'm saying is, this is already rooted in the Machlekes of Rav Hirsch and the Gemeinde, regarding his chabras to Yerushalayim. And contrary to what people think, the Chazon Ish at times was machmir, but the Chazon Ish was sometimes megal on it. Unlike the Brisker Rav, who consistently was machmir. The Chazon Ish understood, the Brisker Rav had a shita, but the Chazon Ish had a shita that sometimes it depends, and you have to be tayface, as Arab and Miyutai, you have to take the lesser of two evils, as opposed to simply saying, I'm not going to take any evil, because then you might wind up with something worse. Right? So this is a machlek, it's the Brisker Rav and the Chazon Ish. Yeah.
But isn't there a difference between a government and the reform conservative movement? Because they have sort of called Rabbani, and they had nothing to do with Rabbani movement. What were they learned Rabbani?
No, that's true also.
It's a total different kind of approach.
Yeah.
To take this and to government, a different kind of structure.
No, that's true. One might differentiate between the government and private organizations. That's true. All of these are chilukim as well. Let me just remind you that in Europe, in Germany, the Kehillah was a government body, an official sanctioned government body. Okay, we will continue next week, and Be'ezus Hashem, the last...